AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tima Abbas-Daly, and joining me to review all the action from Budapest is Inside F2's Fraser Ford. How the heck are you, mate?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Thank you for having me. Looking forward, as always, to talking about all things Formula 2, Formula 3. It's one of my favourite things to do.
If only you had a podcast where you did that by yourself the rest of the time, you know? I feel like you're missing something there.
Tell me about it. Maybe I should think about that, you know?
Inside F3, I'm telling you.
Amazing, imagine.
We'll jump right into what the hell has happened, though. And PHM Racing by Shrews have done another driver change this time. They've replaced Mackenzie Creswell with Woo Hyun Shin for the rest of the 2023 season. Shin's been competing in GB3, where his best finished season was P4 at Alton Park, and he's also raced in the Formula Regional Middle Eastern Championship earlier in the year, where he got a best result of second place in the penultimate round in Abu Dhabi. Always kind of happy to see new drivers coming in and out. It was interesting to see Creswell come in and then leave again. And we've had that with a couple of drivers now where we're not sure how long they're necessarily staying for. And it's also really weird because there's not much of their three season left either. So it's kind of, I keep thinking because F2 and F3, oh yeah, up until Abu Dhabi. I'm like, oh no, actually, it's just the next couple of things in Monza. Then we're done. But he didn't have the best opening weekend, it must be said. But I think all just good experience.
Yeah, definitely good experience. And you know, listen, if he's looking for a seat next year, then I think this is an amazing way of getting up to speed nice and quickly before the end of the season. He wasn't necessarily having the best season in GB3. I think that's fair to say. So, you know, why concentrate on a GB3 season? I'm saving a GB3 season when you can get a bit of experience in a Formula 3 car if that's what he's going to be doing next season. So,
Risk versus reward is worth it there.
Yeah, definitely. I've been speaking to Brad Benavidez recently. I spoke to him in an interview, and he was essentially saying that, you know, for a lot of drivers, they would rather take the risk of stepping up to a new category and learning quicker. You learn an awful lot more by jumping up to a new category and, you know, throwing yourself in at the deep end. You learn a lot more by doing that than you do by having another season at the same level and trying to take yourself to the next level. So I think for Shin, I think it makes sense for him to jump up to Formula 3 if that's what he's looking to do next season and to kind of learn over the next two rounds and, go from there. So, good for him.
Formula 3-wise, pole position was claimed by Zach O'Sullivan. Nice, strong pole from him. And in over in F2, who's someone to help me on this podcast, just to butter a point home that we've been having a bit of a discussion about off the podcast there. Jack doing with pole position there. I know it's one of those is my favourite, but both very strong pole positions.
Both really strong pole positions. Jack Doohan, actually, let's talk about him because he hasn't qualified outside the top five in Formula 2 since Baku, which is, crazy effort. Really good consistency in terms of qualifying. This has been building, and it's a result that he had a pretty shocking start to the season by his own admission in Bahrain, and he had a bit of a shocker in Melbourne at his home race as well. Not the best weekend in Baku. And this has been coming. This has been building since Baku. He's since mid-season tests, to be fair, really got on top of the virtuosi, and everyone's talking about Daniel Ricciardo being back in Formula One this weekend, but we've got another Aussie who's back and back for good. I think Jack Doohan will be competitive for the rest of the season.
Yeah, he's hoping, because it's championship isn't done and dusted by any stretch of imagination, but the gap's widening, so if he can just even bridge that gap to P4, P3 a bit further before season's end. And Abu Dhabi, we always know there's some craziness there in terms of new drivers coming in just for one-off, and that just having a turning thing completely on the head. If something happened there to top two title contenders, Iwasa and Doohan there maybe, along with, I think, is it Behrmann, I think, in P4, then there's a lot of interesting stuff that could play out there.
Yeah, I think, you know, his biggest issue is how consistent Fred Vesti and Terry Poitier are at the moment. You know, if it was a season like the last couple of seasons where there, you know, it's been a bit up and down, and I know obviously Filipe Drugovich was incredibly consistent last season, but he was the only driver who was incredibly consistent. There was always drivers having bad weekends, and if it was a season like that, you'd still back him. You'd say, okay, he's not fully out of the title race, but bearing in mind, you know, how consistent Fred Vesti and Terry Pourchaire have been, I think it maybe works against him in that sense. But listen, if he can finish in the top four, maybe the top three outside chances, 32 points behind Yumi Owasa, if he can finish in the top three, bearing in mind the start of the season he had, I think he'll take that.
No, definitely would do indeed, and sets him up nicely then potentially for next season. But that is what we also said last year, so we won't look at that too hard. We'll look instead at the F2 sprint race, and Kushmaini was on reverse pole there. And just a few talking points from the race, which we can delve into a little bit now. Novalak took Boshong out pretty early doors. Do we expect better from the Frenchman?
Yeah, I think so. He's a good driver, isn't he? So I think we maybe do expect better. Was it a lapsing concentration maybe, or just a frustrated move? I don't know. It didn't matter too much. They weren't in the points. So yeah, maybe it's just a little bit of frustration on Clement's side. But yeah, it was
That's pretty much been his season, unfortunately, just frustration and out of the points.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I'm sure it's frustrating for Ralph Boshong as well, who hasn't been in the points since, I think
it's Jeddah, race winner in Bahrain, and it's just gone downhill since then. And it's just very unfortunate there, because you're like, maybe this is finally his year. And then we shouldn't have said that. We really shouldn't have said that.
Exactly that. Exactly that. You know, as you said, he led the championship, which seems crazy. He led the championship for the first two, three rounds of the season.
And anything can happen in Formula 2.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel for Ralph. I think it probably is going to be his last season in Formula 2. So I do feel for him that he's going out and not having the best of seasons. But that is...
I feel like Formula we do 2. Say that a lot about Boshong, though, and he just comes back as this Monty Python Black Knight there of he doesn't know what he's won, doesn't know what he's beaten. He just keeps turning back up there and just, let's see what I can do.
Yeah, true. Maybe he'll turn up in a primer on ART next season. Who knows?
Would that be a twist? It was a pretty tactical race for the majority of it, though, as sprints go, until the final 10 laps or so. But there was absolutely no touching Dennis Hauger, who pretty much took P1 from the get-go and then just stayed there.
Yeah, it was a good drive by Dennis Hauger. I'm sure he won't be delighted with it, and I'm sure he'd rather be taking the feature race rather than the sprint race. I think, you know, if you'd have said at the start of the season that he'd be celebrating a sprint race victory over a feature race, and he'd be P7 in the standings, I think it is. I don't think he'd be overly happy with that, but it was good. It was a good drive, wasn't it? It was a really good drive. You can't fault that. And Dennis Hauger has actually been reasonably consistent this year. He's one of five drivers who have scored points in every single round bar one. Three of those being Vesti, Pourchaire and Owasa, the top three, and the other
so
one
glad
being...
you didn't test me there.
No, the other one being Richard Bashore as well. So Dennis Hauger he has been consistent. He just hasn't necessarily been consistently fast or, you know, within the top few places of qualifying in particular.
Again, it's those other drivers like Iwasa and Vesti and Pourchaire being consistent as well and higher up that get in his way.
100%. I think Dennis Hauger's maybe a bit of a victim of it being, in my opinion, the best Formula 2 grid we've seen since 2018, when you had George Russell, Lando Norris, Alex Albon, etc., etc. And I think Dennis Hauger is very much a victim of that. I think any other season, and maybe he would have been, you know, one of those drivers competing for the championship. But yeah, we've just ended up in a season where there's so much talent, there's so much consistency at the top of the standings that he's fallen behind a bit. But, you know, he'll be back next season with a bang, I'm sure.
Iwasa also one of these drivers kind of always there, but kind of flying under the radar a bit. P2 in the sprint race, and we're not surprised by it, but we're also just very much that office meme of, geez, what are you doing there? And how did you get here? But also it makes perfect sense. It's this weird contradiction that always just, it's just Iwasa, it's what he does.
100%. He's very consistent, isn't he? Which is exactly what you need in junior categories. I wouldn't say he's electrically fast. You know, he's winning Melbourne.
It's more methodical.
Yeah, he is methodical. That's a really good word of a way of describing it, to be fair. And, you know, I wouldn't say he has the one lap pace of Jack Doohan or Victor Martins, for example. I wouldn't say he has the outright race pace like Thierry Porcher, for example, who has been, again, on the podium most weekends this season. But he's just consistently there, as you say, P2 in the sprint race this weekend and P4 in the feature race. He just always seems to be there or thereabouts, doesn't he? And he's the top Red Bull driver this season. And, you know, you can't argue with that. And, with a outside shot of winning the title.
Outside shot of an AlphaTauri seat potentially next year as well, just to make that headache for Red Bull even more annoying for them. So it's kind of, if he doesn't need to win necessarily, but if he does, then crap, what do we do with him all of a sudden? We need to, oh no, it's like we've not thought this through completely properly. So it's there's a lot of potential for fun there.
Another driver we have to shoot off to Super Formula to do a season there, just to bridge the gap.
I forgot about Liam Lawson. Oh dear, this is getting out of hand now. Oh, we're going to have to get charts out again and figure this out. We'll focus on Ollie Bearman, P3, because phenomenal late move on what can only be described as an unsuspecting poor chair. He wasn't expecting that, was he?
Ollie Bearman's made a bit of a habit of this, hasn't he? Some of his moves, his move around... Yeah, his Baku, definitely his move around the outside of Enzo Fittipaldi at Silverstone as well, which is unbelievable. And he's amazing in wheel-to-wheel combat, isn't he? Which is something that we've grown to absolutely love with Ollie Bearman. And what a talent. Hasn't necessarily put it all together throughout the weekend, which is maybe something that he'll go away, have a look at and work on. Assuming he comes back.
He's still a rookie.
Yeah, exactly that. Assuming he comes back next season, he's going to be a real force to be reckoned with. Maybe even the favourite for the championship next season. So, what a move, what a talent. I look forward to seeing what he can do for the rest of the season.
Rounding out the rest of the top 10, then we had Porcher in P4, Deruvola P5, Meini P6, which is still pretty decent despite his starting position of reverse pole. He just kind of ran out of tyres and there wasn't much he could do about that. Martins in P7, Hadjar P8, Vesti P9, and Doohan in P10. Pretty much all the drivers, more or less, that you'd expect to be up there.
Yeah, pretty much. I felt for Kush. I really felt for Kush. You know, it was a golden opportunity for him to maybe take his first win. It didn't work out. I think, he's still got to be absolutely ecstatic with his season.
It goes back to what you were saying at the start with Benavides. It's worth the risk to jump into a new category and learn fast, because we all saw that promotion and we were like, what on earth are they doing? That is a interesting call. And then we're like, well, we're just going to go and delete those episodes where we were talking some nonsense about him, because we clearly have no idea what we're talking about. And the fact that we're expecting him to be on reverse pole and convert it in his rookie season in a Campos, you'd think there'd be something wrong with us, but it weirdly makes sense as well.
100%. I mean, what a season he's had. He's really taken to the Formula 2 cars. From the second he jumped in, by the way, in the Abu Dhabi test at the end of last season, he has not looked out of place in a Formula 2 car at all. It just seems to suit his driving style, doesn't it? And as you say, you know, for us to be sat here and saying, it's a bit of a shame he didn't win the race, bearing in mind he was starting on pole, says all you need to know about Kush Meini and his season. And he'll be around for the next couple of years, in my opinion. You know, I wouldn't put it past him to be in a Virtuosi next season, for example, or a team that is likely to compete to win races. So, I think this is just a start for Kush Meini. So, really excited to see what he can do moving forward.
Looking at the feature race then, it was another bad day for Novalak. DNF'd pretty much straight out of the box. And I have written, never mind, because there's not really much else we could say on that one. That's essentially his season again, as we're saying there. So, we had more entertainment, though, from Crawford and Maloney down the back of the pack, and it was nice to see that elbows out aggressiveness, but my, they did realise they weren't fighting for points, didn't they?
Yeah, it was, it was certainly aggressive from Jack, wasn't it? He's definitely got his elbows out.
It's very Perez-y for later on in the F1. It was like, I've seen this before.
Exactly that. It was aggressive. It was hard racing. The stewards didn't see anything wrong with it. I guess that tells you everything you need to know. I don't think Zay Maloney was overly impressed with it, especially as fellow Red Bull juniors. I'm sure they will have a about that at some point, I'm sure. But Jack's had a quietly good season as well this season. A few podiums here and there, which I think he'll be happy with. He's looked the better driver than Isaac Hadjar, who I think a lot of people were tipping to maybe come in and have a really good season. So, yeah,
so
really,
we skip ahead to Hadjar a little bit there, just to go on to that, because one of the things that I'll go off my note in a second, but one of the things I was kind of surprised at until that bit of the feature race, because I thought up to that point, oh, he's been fairly quiet. Maybe he's taken the time, he's matured, but we haven't heard him on the radio in ages moaning about something. Maybe he's turned a leaf and Crawford besting him is getting the better of him. And then, oh no, never mind. He's back on again, and he's annoyed that he actually has to race someone. Yes, it's Cordeal, and you might not be expecting it to be from him, but the alternative strategy was working really well for Cordeal, and he was well within his rights to fight for him, so I'm not sure why Hadjar was complaining, to be honest.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Yeah, I get the frustration now. I mean, Cordeal almost has nothing to fight for, so I do understand the frustration from Isaac.
He's also got nothing to lose.
He has also got nothing to lose. And I guess if you're running dead last and you're having a bit of a boring race and it's for track position, then I guess it's just it's your way of entertaining it and maybe practicing that wheel-to-wheel combat. So Cordeal didn't do anything wrong. Absolutely not. I can understand Isaac's frustration, but I don't think Cordeal did anything wrong. It didn't ultimately cost Isaac Hadjar too much. I'm sure looking back at it at the end of the race, he maybe he'd forgotten about that one quite quickly, given the race that he ended up having. But interesting one, isn't it? And I think we should expect to see Isaac Hadjar running in the top 10 more regularly towards the end of the season. I think he's turned a corner. And I think, he'll be setting himself up for another season in Formula 2 next season. So, maybe something to expect for the rest of the season.
I don't know about you, but for me, whilst there was more race to run, the highlight of the race and of the weekend, enough to for me in particular, was Alex Brundle's quote on lap 14 about Jack Doohan's tyres. As Alex Jakes was saying, an absolute corker again, Brundle. It's a bit like porridge. Doesn't look great, but it seems to be working when describing Jack Doohan's tyres. And where does he come up with these brilliant, brilliant descriptions?
Yeah, unbelievable, isn't it? You know what? I absolutely love Alex Jakes and Alex Young Brundle in the commentary box.
It's just meant to be, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. The two of them, you can tell they get on so well. They work so well together. And as you say, it's just meant to be. It's just one of those combinations that just works, isn't it? And I think, please, keep it as that for years to come. You know, hopefully Alex Jakes...
I want that for the F1.
Yeah, I mean, amazing. Just sign us up, for F1 TV or whatever, Channel 4 maybe, I don't know. It's a combination that just works, isn't it? Which is amazing. So, and I like both of them individually as well. They're both great people, aren't they?
Well, definitely, definitely. But something that doesn't work quite as well is that awkward moment for Porsche where you come across your teammate and he's fighting you into turn 4 and runs you off the track just a bit and consequently helps your championship rival, in this case Vesti, and shuffles you then behind Hadjar. Imagine that was a fun kind of meeting after the race.
Yeah, I'm not sure there'll be... Well, Tao, from Tao's perspective anyway, I'm not sure he'll be giving Victor Martins a big hug after the race and saying, well done on your podium, mate. I'm not sure he will. It's a really interesting one. We've just been talking about it. We've been talking about it on the F2 show as we reviewed the Budapest race weekend. And there's two sides, there's two points to this, right? I think the first point is Victor Martins simply defended and Tao Porcher went off track. Whether or not Victor Martin should have defended that aggressively, I don't know. Maybe Teo Porsche was maybe a little bit too aggressive with his overtake. And I put a poll out on Twitter. I was interested to see what people thought of that. And actually, 52% of the voters said that actually Teo Porsche was too aggressive in their opinion, and Teo Porsche maybe should have waited a little bit, which was a really interesting perspective, because I guess my first initial reaction to it was, wow, Victor Martins is defending aggressively there. But maybe they're right. Maybe Teo Porsche should have waited a little bit, particularly given his in the context of the championship, he had more to lose.
He's got the more experience level there. He's got more to lose as well if it goes wrong. And at the same time, maybe with all the other drivers this weekend, there was just something in the air that just made that extra bit aggressive for some reason.
100%. And someone on Twitter actually said that, you know, they're both too aggressive. They're both really aggressive when they fight against each other, which maybe is a fair point as well. I'm thinking back to Monaco, where they had a little clash as well. But that's one point of it. Who was more aggressive, Martins, Porsche? Should they maybe have... should Porsche maybe have retrospectively given a left it a few more corners, if you like. The other point to this is ART. I know we don't have team orders as such in Formula 2, but for ART to pit Victor Martins on that exact lap, knowing that exact moment Victor Martins would come out in between Porsche and Vesti, his main rival for the championship, I didn't really understand it. I was screaming at the screen saying, why didn't you pit Victor Martins two laps earlier or two laps later so that he doesn't come out exactly in the middle of that battle, right? If they pitted him two laps later, yes, he would have been further behind Porsche and Vesti. But it allows Porsche to attack Vesti, which helps him in terms of the Drivers' Championship. But also in terms of the Teams' Championship, you know, Porsche dropped back. He obviously... lost a place to Hajar with the marbles on his tyres, and then subsequently then lost a place to Owasa as well. And he lost points for the team as well. And, you know, we look at the team standards right now, and, you know, Prema and ART are dead level on points after 10 rounds. And, you know, maybe if ART had pitted Martins a couple of laps later, they would have been picking up a few more points in the championship and leading the championship, because I think Porsche maybe would have had a run at Vesti. Even if not, he wouldn't have lost any places, but Martins would have flown past him on the fresher tyres and then maybe flown past Vesti as well. So I didn't really get it from ART. I know we don't have team orders in Formula 2, and you can't have team orders because of the amount of money that each driver is paying for their seat. I'm not saying that ART should have told Victor Martins to let him through.
It's just a curious strategy call and a necessary headache.
Yeah, I just didn't really understand it, to be honest. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, you're pretty much agreeing, unfortunately, there. To be honest, I can't really have any controversy with you on that one. It does seem a bit curious there. Like you say, you want to play the team game. You've got the rookie versus the veteran, and you need to prioritise the veteran because they've got the chance to win the championship because their future's more up in the air than yours is. And at the same time, it was hard, fair racing, so maybe there's nothing to complain about at the end of the day. We enjoyed it, nothing bad came of it, and maybe we just have been starved of drama a little bit in places that we want to create a bit more that where we need it.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, listen, I'm all here for teammate battles and for drivers being aggressive. And it's enjoyable, right? It's enjoyable.
Definitely. Yeah. It was very much a ooh moment.
It was. And I do wonder whether at the end of the season, you know, if Vesti wins the championship by 3 points from Porsche, for example, will we look back at that moment? And will that be the moment that, could have changed?
You know, it's like a Baku 2021 for Lewis. If only you hadn't done this, or if only we'd had a full race in Spa, this kind of thing. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that pans out.
Definitely.
But Doohan was the one who won the race with pole, with fastest lap, solidifying him once again in my good graces, and should be in yours now, and you should never have doubted him for a second, Fraser. Vesti P2, Martins P3, as mentioned, Iwasa then P4, Hajar P5, Porcher having to settle for P6, Helga P7, not bad, but probably not where he wanted it, Fittipaldi in P8, Correa in P9, which is lovely to see, and Vachon in P10.
Yeah, it was good weekend. Well, good weekend. Good feature race for VAR. I'm sure they're happy to have two drivers in the points as well. And nice to see JM Correa, beating Richard Vachon. Richard Vachon's obviously been a bit of a star this season, P8 in the championship, 76 points, I think he's on. So really good to see JM beating Richard Vachon fair and square over a race distance. And I'm sure VAR will be, albeit very low in the points, I'm sure they'll be very happy to be two cars in the points. So.
Well, that about wraps it up for F2. F3 wise, though, which is where the real meat gets on the bone, I think. For the sprint race, we had Gabriel Mini on reverse pole, which was great to see there. And then we had a little bit of chaos left, right, and centre, which is essentially just Formula 3, to be perfectly honest. Ido Cohen, Sebastian Montoya, and Nicholas Solov all DNF'd. There was a lap one incident for both of the Solov and Cohen, I think, with the consequences. Possible suspension damage. Oh, that was for Montoya. But they took their time before materialising definitively for him and bringing out a late safety car. Solov of them was caught up in the safety car restart chaos that saw Marty spun around as well as others. And it was a shame because he was on for his best F3 result prior to this, but just not meant to be today.
Yeah, not meant to be. It's a shame, isn't it? There's so many stories in Formula 3 up and down the grid where drivers are saying, oh, you know, it could have been, today could have been my day. Today could have been my day. There's just so much chaos and carnage in Formula 3, isn't there? That I think probably after every single race, you've probably got the top 20 all thinking they could have been in the points at some point, you know? So,
It's not unrealistic for them to think that either, which is the best bit about that and also the most frustrating bit about that.
100%. You wouldn't like to be a driver in Formula 3. And it's so difficult in that championship to stand out. And I think that's what makes Bortoletto's championship leads that much more impressive.
I say it every week. I don't know how he's got that. We've been watching the races, but we just don't quite understand how he's managed to get such a lead out there. Just like, but you've not really done much, but you have. But I don't understand it.
Yeah, I wouldn't say Bortoletto's pace has been absolutely electric by any means, but he, you know, started the season strong, didn't he? Two feature race wins in the first two rounds. That has set him up for the season. And since then, he's just been consistent. He's been consistently in the points. He's been qualifying in that, you know, mid-pack between, you know, third and seventh every single weekend, which then gives you a chance in both races. It gives you a chance in the feature race on the Sunday, but it also gives you a chance to win races on the Saturday. And obviously we saw that this weekend with two really strong finishes, points finishes. And again, that's all he needs to do at this point is just continue collecting those points. And he's got such a big gap now that, you know, he can continue as long as he qualifies. I don't know, maybe sixth for both Spa and Monza. I don't see how anyone's going to win the championship other than him, to be honest with you. So 43
points.
Need to
be incredibly F3, being incredibly F3 for something to happen to him, for him to lose this now, I think.
Exactly that. It's really interesting, isn't it, that he is the driver who looks like he's going to win the championship when you compare him to someone like Boganovic or Paul Aron, who have obviously beaten him.
Names you would have thought at the beginning of the season would be right up there, if not winning it, would be very close in it on points. And no one can touch him, practically.
100%. I mean, Boganovic beat Bortoletto, Aron and Bortoletto to the championship in Frecca last season. I don't think coming into the season, you would have thought that Bortoletto was the one who was going to win the championship. But you know what? You've got to, you know, credit where credit's due. He's done the job this year. And, he's got a massive, massive margin. And, you can't really look beyond him now, can you?
Not at all. And Mini in P1, though, as we said, with first pole, he lost the lead at the start to Bedrim, but claimed it back once the pair had cleared the field by 5 seconds, which is also mad for F3. Bortoletto then was in P2 by the end of it. He snatched it just before the final corner, the final lap, which again, showing this, just don't underestimate this driver. And again, with the gap between the end of F3 and the end of F2, maybe we see him in Abu Dhabi somewhere. Nikita Bedrin in P3 then with his and Jensen Motorsport's first podium of the year, which was just, it's what you want to see in Formula 3. It's that kind of, you have that feel good, you have that cheekiness of Bortoletto, you've got Mini doing what Mini does, and also, quick side note on Mini, does he not look like an old man in a young man's body?
Yeah, he does, doesn't he? He really does.
I looked at him first a little too long in an interview, and I thought, there's something that's Benjamin Button-esque about him, and it's not his fault, but it explains why he does so well. He's got the wisdom from somewhere that is beyond him, but he's managed to use it in this Formula 3 check campaign so far.
100%. And what a nice guy, by the way. If you've ever spoken to him outside of the car, what a lovely guy. And yeah, I think for me, I think Gabriele Mini is probably the driver with the most pace in Formula 3. I want to say that definitely over one lap. And I think for me, he'll be in Formula 2 next season. I think he will be a real... I think he could do a great job in Formula 2 next season. I think for me, he's one of the most talented drivers on the Formula 3 grid, in and amongst an awful lot of talent up and down that grid. I'd rate him quite highly, Gabriele Mini, as one of, if not the standout driver in Formula 3 for me this season. So
definitely. And then we had Aaron in P4, Goeth in P5, Mansell in P6. He's been shaping up nicely as a driver in the last couple of rounds. Yep. Colapinto then P6, Edgar P7, Saucy P8, and Boganovic there rounding out the point scorers there, I think, which was a constant state of fluidity essentially throughout the sprint race, because there was just, as we say, there's so much going on in F3 that it's hard to keep track of it all, and you don't know where to look and where to prioritise who we talk about on this, because everyone's just doing such a bang-up job.
Yeah, 100%. You don't know where to look in Formula 3, do you?
Feature race-wise, then, Frederick DNF'd with the supposed puncture, but retired, so it must have been something else, because I feel like you don't just retire for a puncture, even F3, when they're not as trained for pit stops, you can still change a tyre. So that was a little curious there. O'Sullivan, though, was absolutely dominant and just claimed P1 from pole. Boganovic then P2, and Colapinto again in the points and on the podium with P3. It was a pretty straightforward race, let's face it. There wasn't too much to write home about, but it was a tactical race, but it proved a little bit of drama, but there was not much. It was just the mid-pack where everything was kind of going on, but there was also not much going on, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it was quite a quiet race for Formula 3 standards, wasn't it?
We were treated too much in Budapest previously with F3, and now it's kind of the expectations too high.
Yeah, 100%, exactly. It was a great drive by Zach O'Sullivan.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Ben absolutely controlled the race, didn't he? Him and Boganovic were in a league of their own. I couldn't believe it when they said that, obviously, it's his fourth win, which is matches the all-time most wins in Formula 3, along with Frederik Vesti, Dennis Hauger. I couldn't believe that when they said that stat, which is amazing. But I think Zach O'Sullivan is a driver who... maybe he's gone under the radar a little bit this season. I think he's done a good job for Prema. I think he's clearly a very talented driver. You can see that from his junior record of winning GB3, for example. And I think it'd be really interesting. Again, I think he'll be another driver that jumps up to Formula 2 next season. I think there'll be a few, you know. I think Mini will be one. I think Zach O'Sullivan will obviously step up. Bortoleto, Paul Aron, Boganovic, I think, will step up. Maybe Pepe Marti as well. I think there'll be a real gaggle of same as last season of Formula 3 drivers stepping up to Formula 2, and it'd be really interesting to see how they get on this season. But Zach O'Sullivan, great drive by him, we'll see how he does for the rest of the season.
Bad day weekend overall for Montoya and a bad day for Mini. Just to round things up, then, another DNF Montoya, just very unfortunate there, because we know he's capable of more. It's just some bad luck coming his way, and a bit of a fall from grace immediately for Mini, unfortunately, there. But as we've talked about, there is there's no need to look into that too much. He'll be back, sure enough, very soon, probably in Spa. As for drivers that stood out across both F2 and F3 for me this weekend, I'll kick things off with F2. You know who I'm going to say, Fraser. It was Jack Doohan. Return of the King with pole winning fastest lap. I just need you to agree and we can move on swiftly.
Yeah, agreed. Jack Doohan, great drive. He's back.
Anyone else stand out for you in F2 in particular, or are we just going to settle for Mr. Doohan?
I think you can't look any further than Jack Doohan, can you? So I think
correct
for
answer.
Me... Frederik Vesti's consistency is really shining through. Another P2 finish, and he's doing everything he needs to do to win the championship. So I think that's impressive. And Dennis Hauger controlled the sprint race. But again, as I said earlier, I think he'll be hoping for more than just sprint race victories. So, but no, Jack Doohan's obviously...
It's a good quality in a driver like Hauger where you win a sprint race and you're disappointed with it because it means that you know you're capable of much more and you want that bit extra and you've got the motivation for it, which as a team, you're like, yes, we want that and we're going to keep that hopefully.
100%, and it's the same with Jack Doohan. Jack Doohan hasn't been happy all season with performances, and the only time he's happy is when he's been in the feature race. So it's a real strength in terms of mentality for drivers like that, isn't it? So
Formula 3 wise, for me, I was kind of looking down into the mid pack a little bit further down to see if there was anyone there worth shouting out to. And for me, Luke Browning in the sprint race, P18 to P11, it's something you can't really shake a stick at. It was solid progress, and he made some nice moves throughout that race. And again, it's only a sprint race. There's less time in theory to make happen. Although, weirdly, the feature race and the sprint race were the same length this weekend for some reason, but I'm not 100% sure of. But again, nothing off Browning there. Nice solid little drive.
Yeah, I agree. Luke Brandon did a really good job. I think he's definitely a standout driver. And again, someone who I'm sure is going to stick around in Formula 3 next season, maybe get a big drive and maybe be a championship contender next season. I think someone that stood out for me and has stood out for me over the last three rounds is Franco Colapinto. Quietly going about his business,
quietly
consistently,
there, isn't he?
Yeah, getting podiums every single, well, most rounds. And, you know, I don't think the MP car is the best on the grid. You know, I think it's quite comfortably behind Prema and behind the Trident, for example, which makes them it's difficult to get a top six finish if you're behind both of those teams in Formula 3. But he just consistently pops up with podiums, doesn't he? And in not necessarily the quickest car. And I think he's quietly, as I said, consistently going about his business and doing a really good job this season. Another podium for him in the feature race this weekend.
Essentially doing a little bit like Victor Martins last year, does enough to just build that consistency there. And whilst it's not enough for a championship this year, it's exactly what he needs to be doing to set himself nicely for next year on that one, if he stays in F3.
100%, or maybe he'll step up to Formula 2 and my team will take a gamble on him. I don't know, but I'm just looking at the standings now. 93 points. He's only 8 points off of second in the championship in a car that's quite considerably slower than the cars that are in front of him. You could say the same about Pepe Marti. I don't think the Campos is, you know, maybe the fourth quickest car in Formula 3. And obviously he's up there 100 points.
Situation there, isn't it? It's the driver rather than the car getting the maximum out of it and showing that if I can do this in this car, put me in a Premier or an ART, look what I can then do.
100%, exactly that. And, you know, I think both Pepe Marti and Colapinto are doing exactly that. So, fair play to them.
My last shout out for more amusement purposes is Christian Mansell in the feature race. He did defend well with the car that wasn't able to do much, to be fair. But also, the rival for my Alex Brundle quote of the weekend is his team radio, where the team were telling him, the car ahead, they're quicker in the final corner. And he comes on, cool as anything, and goes, perfectly politely, despite the obvious here, I don't mean to be rude, but no shit. It's just like very much a racing driver's response there to, I had figured this out as much for myself, strangely enough. I didn't need you to point that out to me.
He's a right character, isn't he, Christian Mansell? I love the relationship that him and Pepe Marti have. I think it's absolutely brilliant in those Campos garages. 100%. And listen, he's doing a really good job, isn't he? Last couple of rounds, had a great round in Silverstone, got that podium for the first time, and another really strong weekend in Budapest. Maybe not quite as strong as what it was in Silverstone. Maybe, you know, dropped through the pack a little bit, but you know, still showing that he's a really strong driver. He's coming on leaps and bounds this season, and I think he could be maybe someone to look out for next season as Formula 3 moves into 2024.
Get Nigel to come in and help out because we know he's definitely related, don't we, Fraser?
Of course. He's obviously related to Nigel Mansell. You know, that's, just look at the surname.
Only people on the inside really know that one.
Exactly that.
we'll move on quickly to Flirt Watch there, which essentially we just take a look at Sophia Flirt, how she's been doing this weekend. It's pretty much buying exactly what it says on the tin. Qualified in P28, and I'd say that even though it's tough qualifying in mixed conditions, I think of all the bits of her racecraft, qualifying is probably her weak point here, because especially when you've got a grid of 30 cars there. I mean, we know the car that she's in is definitely not the best on the grid, so that doesn't help things a lot there, but I'd say it's not quite as bad as Arthur Leclerc's qualifying from Formula 3, but it's not the two aren't a million miles away from each other.
Yeah, so Sophia always seems to climb in races, didn't she? As you say, you know, P28 in qualifying, but was it P15 in a sprint race and P18 in the feature race?
P17 in the sprint race, but she made up 7 places in the first 4 laps, which was just damn impressive, and then kind of was a little bit there. And we saw Austria as well, what she can do when there's an opportunity to be taken hold of there. And feature race, again, 10 places up to P18. Felt like a tricky race there, but solid progress nonetheless. And it's interesting that she, most times this season has been beating her teammates. There's been one or two times where it's not happened. And whilst other teams have been mixing and matching drivers a little bit, she's been that consistent driver within her own team and within some of the drivers at the back of the pack. And she's just there like, I don't need to beat these newbies coming in. I just need to run my own race and see what I can do there. And my competition is not with them. It's just with me. And I'm going to keep going and doing the stuff. And it's one of these weekends, I think, where there weren't really many retirements across the board there. So it was, or if they did happen, she was already past them. So it wasn't helping her anyway, because she'd already overtaken them.
Yeah, 100%. Great racecraft to make her way through the field. We don't see it very much on camera, if you like, but great racecraft to you know, fight her way through the field. And you know, if she can, you know, maybe not sort out her qualifying, that sounds a bit harsh, but if she can, you know, get herself up a little bit higher up the standings in qualifying, then I think she'll set herself up lovely for some points in the races. So
it's that fine margin. If you could get into like P20, P18 for qualifying, and you do what you do in the race normally, then that's points and that's consistent.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think we've got to bear in mind as well, I don't think the PHM is the best car on the grid this season. I think that's fair to say. I guess limited by that as such. I think overall, you know, she could be really happy with her progress and with her season so far. And we're looking forward to next season with only 2 rounds to go. I'd love to see her back in Formula 3 next season. I think it would be brilliant for the sport and brilliant for her as well.
I'll say on the podcast what I've said to you privately in terms of what PHM and other teams do in terms of promoting drivers up to F2. She's, in my mind, still got 2 points on the board, so that's 2 more than a lot of other drivers have got before being promoted to F2, so that's all I'm going to say on that one. Maybe she can do a push Miney and just absolutely trance it then when she gets there. We will also mention Jamie Chadwick in this, as she was in the Indy Next category over in Iowa this weekend, qualified in P13 and finished P10 in the race, so good solid points then. With ovals, staying out of trouble and making progress up the grid is pretty much all you can ask for, because it's ovals. We don't really want to touch those.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I didn't actually watch that race, so I don't know how she got on.
I watched the 5-minute highlights, and it was just pretty much staying out of trouble and getting on with things. And that's, again, the crazy. Indy NXT is very much the cousin for Formula 2 and Formula 3. It's got that nice bit of craziness to it, I think. There, it's a very good feeder series, and I'm glad that she's over there. So it was, again, she's proving that. I was looking at the championship standings, and it would require some calamity to happen to those ahead of her, but she's not a million miles away from being in the top 5 overall, which for a rookie year in a category that she's being challenged by is not a bad thing at all.
Yeah, pretty solid. And we all know from championships in W Series how good a driver Jamie Chadwick is. So great for her. And as you say, as a rookie, being that high up in the standings is obviously a really positive thing. So hopefully she'll continue to learn, to adapt her driving style to what it's like out in the States. And who knows, she might be an IndyCar in a few years. I'd love to see that.
I'd love to see that too, to be honest. That would be chef's kiss. As for driver and constructor championships for both of these seasons, and both these series more likely, F2 wise, we've got Vesti out in front still with 153 points, Porcher still a hot in his heels with 142. I love how I've missed out the name here for P3, but I know it's Iwasa because it's always Iwasa. With 132 points, he's really not far behind. Not far behind at all. He could still do this.
He could, upside chance.
Prema and ART, as we mentioned, in joint kind of first on points, but it's Prema in P1 with Countback and ART in P2. And Dams are also in Formula 2 back in P3 on 171 points there. As you're the guest and you don't get to talk about F3 too much, do you want to have a read of the championship standings for the drivers and constructors?
Oh, I can do. I can do. So we have Gabriel Bortoleto, top of the standings, with 144 points. 43 points here clear of Zach O'Sullivan on 101 points. And finally, rounding out the top three, we have Pepe Marti on 100 points. But that little gaggle between Zach O'Sullivan in P2, all the way down to Gabriele Mini in P7, separated by 14 points, if my maths is correct. So a real tight gaggle. And I think, yeah, exactly. I think, you know, it's any one of those six drivers could end up P2 at the end of the season if they have a good round in either Spa or Monza. So that will be an interesting one to keep an eye out on. As for the team standings, Prema are top of the team standings on 289 points. Not that far ahead of Trident, actually. 274 points for Trident, so not too far behind. And again, that's all to play for as we move into the final two rounds of the season. And Hi-Tech are actually the team that round out the top three, 154 points. But again, quite close between Hi-Tech, Campos and MP Motorsport in third to fifth. So again, all to play for as we move into the final couple of rounds of the season.
Perfectly done. It's almost like you do this on a regular basis for another podcast. It's just spooky. But that is all we have time for on this week's episode. Join us again soon. We'll have some more excellent F1 content for you, most likely in the form of feeder series review action from Spa. So do make sure you've liked, subscribed and got notifications turned on to not miss anything there. In the meantime, though, Fraser, where can the people find you if they're not sick to death of listening to you already?
I was going to say, if you're not sick to death of listening to me already, you can find me over at Inside F2. So, yeah, go and check out our YouTube page where we review every round of the Formula 2 Championship. Also do some driver interviews over there, which is quite cool. We're also on Twitter at F2 Inside, and we're also on Instagram at Inside Formula 2. So, yeah, go and check us out over there if you want to hear some more Formula 2 thoughts.
It's great stuff. Should definitely go and do that. As for myself, you can find me over on Is It Fast, On The Curbs, the Nitro RX podcast, Paddock Sorority, and Instagram. And as it's a feeder series weekend in Spa, I will be in Castellet instead because F1 Academy is there this weekend, and that is how I get to watch it because it's not going to be on TV. So this is what I have to do. And so, yeah, if you're there and you've listened to this, come and say hi. That is very much all we've got time for, though. So thank you very much for listening, and we will be back soon with more Undercut Podcast goodness.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.